From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 6th day of October 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of Adium Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In agricultural news, the EU and South Korea have cut a trade deal, and it appears some think it will cut the cheese exports from the United States. And the IMF has issued a report suggesting the global economy will continue to grow in the coming year, and that growth will come in spite of a weaker prediction for the U.S. economy. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. And along the way, we'll hear a fun little story about horseradish. That'll happen as we move through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the December soft red winter wheat pit at 658 and a quarter were down 5 1/4. March at 693, 5 1/4 lower. May at 709, down 5 1/4. And July at 707 3/4, down 5 3/4. Hard red December from Kansas City, 697.5, 3.5 cents lower. December corn futures today, $4.88.5, down 2.5. The March at 499 1/4, 2.5 lower. The May at 505 1/4, down 2 3/4. July 509 1/4, down 2.5. And next year's December contract at 476 1/2, up 0.25 cents. November beans at $10.62, finished 9 3/4 cents lower. January down 9.5 at 1072. March soybeans, 1080, down 9 1/4. The May at 1084 3/4, down 9. July, 8 3/4, lower at 1091. And next year's November at 1057 1/2, down 6 3/4. Meal at 291.60, down 330. Oil at 43.44, down 3 cents on the day. Mercantile Exchange finished the October live cattle at 94.85, down 70. December down 60 at 97.07 1/2. October feeders at 109.20, down 35 for the day. November's at 109.25, down 25. And lean hogs at 75.27 1/2, down 7 1/2. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures November contract, $83.27 a barrel, up 45 cents. Ethanol at $1.94 4/10, 2 7/10 higher. Natural gas at $3.86 7/10, up 12 4/10. The heating oil or diesel fuel for the day at $2.30 6/10, that's up 0.4 cents. And the gold futures at $1,346.40, up $7.50. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 10,951 now, at 6 points higher for the afternoon. The U.S. dollar at 77.39 is just about 0.35 lower, and the CRB index at 289.15 is up 0.73 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. It says for this afternoon, in the immediate area, should be sunny, a high near 75 degrees. West winds around 10 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear, a low of 48 degrees. West-southwest winds between 7 and 9, and then they'll turn to the north-northwest. Sunny skies tomorrow, high near 74. North-northwest winds between 7 and 9 again. And then tomorrow night, clear, a low of 45. North-northwest winds at about 6 miles an hour. Friday, we'll go to 78 degrees. The skies will be sunny. Winds will be calm, and they'll drift to the south-southwest. And we'll have a clear and low evening on 46 degrees on Friday night. And Sunday, we'll run all the way up to 81 degrees, and it'll be very sunny on that day. Saturday night, mostly clear, a low of 52. More complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour, and we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
It's a very beautiful, gorgeous afternoon here in central Illinois as harvest continues to wind down.
Yeah, I am going to make my way towards Hume tomorrow, I think, yet, but I'm not quite certain. I'll be there with the pork producers and with the Farm Credit Services folks and maybe have Bob Ahern along with us. He's the farm safety specialist from here on campus for lunch tomorrow. You say suggest things are winding down. Will I see a lot of tillage done between here and there?
I think so. And I tell you what, Tanya does a beautiful job in Hume, Illinois, and the town will put out the red carpet for you. And, of course, the Farm Credit people were here yesterday. We had a wonderful time with them as well.
All right. They're spreading the news of farm safety and getting people fed, along with the pork producers. That's kind of a fun thing to go out and do. I had fun with them a couple of weeks ago, just going to farmers' places of business, their homesteads, that is. And it'll be fun to go to the elevators tomorrow. Glad you had one there this week. Let's talk about what's been happening in the marketplace. It's been an interesting week. Since the time we talked on Wednesday a week ago, what have you seen and what's happening and where do you feel the market's headed?
Well, big. Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground. Farmers spent a lot of time calling today, and it reminded me of what usually happens in November when harvest is over with instead of early October when harvest is over with. And, of course, the concern is the Friday USDA crop production report. People are still examining, of course, the stocks report and the issues from that. They're also talking about yields and potential price levels. And, of course, the birthday present, so to speak, was when we saw Japan lower their interest rates early in the week, and we saw this tremendous rally yesterday in the stocks of commodities, corn, soybeans, it really put in a lot of performance. I think today was more of a profit-taking day based on the production estimate and harvest still in full swing in the north and west parts of the big corn belt.
Well, let's talk more about that production estimate, which is due out this week from the United States Department of Agriculture. I know that Iowa will figure big into the numbers. Of course, they're the number one corn-producing and soybean-producing state in the nation. What do you hear from?
Well, yeah, one thing that we are of the opinion is, of course, when we check with Iowa, F.C. Stone, a very fine outfit, came out with 177 and 53, and, of course, that was issued last Friday. And over the weekend and harvest this week, the feeling is that corn crop could be smaller. The bean crop could be larger. This morning, of course, we had a firm that does satellite imagery saying the acreage on corn would be up, beans acreage would be smaller. Some of that has been factored in by the Sparks Informer Group. The general impression, of course, is that the million-dollar question, so to speak, will the government come in with under 160 bushel per acre number? And, you know, I wonder about that. And, of course, I do think the bean crop is going to be very large. Informa came in with, F.C. Stone came in with a 45.8, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it's not that number or larger. And I think at some point in time we will see under 160 bushel corn crop. But we have to take things in step. And I think after the stocks report debacle, I'm sure there's been a message sent somewhere in Washington that get it right this time, guys.
Well, that's an interesting message. I think the statisticians there would tell you they take the numbers and that's the numbers they get. But well,
and of course there is a supply demand report there, and that's one way they can get those numbers to hopefully balance out.
All right, Brett, are you feeling safer this week for farmers, your farmer hedgers, that is, than you were last week when we talked?
Well, good question and a good point. That, you know, the problem is what does 900 to a billion bushel corn carry over mean flat price? And my comment is that we're pretty close to values that are necessary this time in the report. And of course, the bean number would say that the beans seem to be a little lofty in price. But when we talk to the demand side of the equation, we understand that China's has placed the additional soybean crush plants, increased their size. They're buying soybeans at a rapid pace, and the tug of war is they want to buy them, and the amount of volume that's going to China is unbelievable, and it's you know, tremendous crush margins. The cattle, the hogs, chickens are making tremendous amounts of money, so it's a value-added boost to the world economy, particularly the U.S. soybean farmer, that we have a good customer overseas.
Hey, can you go through some numbers for me,
sure,
real quick? Because you mentioned a 900 to a billion bushel carryout. Of course, we're at a 1.7, right, and a 1.4. So if we take 4 bushel off and we went to 158.5 from 162.5, that's about what we added back in on the stocks report, 300 million bushels. So you're at a 1.1. You've got an awfully low corn number coming in, or there's something else afoot there in usage.
Well, I think the combination is, as we all know, Todd, there's probably, we use probably 150 to 200 million bushels of new crop corn in the equation that the stocks report didn't equate. In other words, out of that 1.7 billion bushels, there was high damage, 700 barges of Cargill corn full of damage. There's test weight losses. There's a lot of just junk corn in that 1.7 billion bushels. Even that new crop was used and wasn't put in the inventory.
Yeah,
and
so you're
that
saying
was
it's been
1.7. Yeah, and you know, the truth of the matter is that it was used, it needed to be used, and it disappeared, and it showed a bunch of junk old crop corn around, and that's where everybody's steaming mad about the whole problem.
So it won't show up this time around, but it might end up showing up
in the January. And also they'll try to show some of the problems in the actual supply-demand tables.
Okay, thank you so much. Any final word?
Have a profitable day, and have a nice day in Hume, Illinois. It's a beautiful ADM elevator, and have fun.
I knew you'd like that. Thanks, Paul.
Right.
Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what Paul had to say again, you can always do that at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Well, stay with us. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment to take a look at all the agricultural news for the afternoon. One other note, if you'd like to hear Paul again in a different way, you can do that off our mobile analyst portal. It's just voicemail. Here's the number. It's 217-333-3434. That's 217-333-3434.
In agricultural news, the European Union and South Korea today signed a free trade pact, cutting billions of dollars in industrial and agricultural duties. The deal should come into force on July 1st of next year. Meanwhile, a bipartisan group of more than 50 members of the U.S. House have written U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk to complain about the bilateral free trade agreement between the EU and South Korea. The group contends that the free trade deal could greatly disadvantage exporters of U.S. cheeses and other agricultural products by requiring South Korea to recognize Europe's geographical indicators for some products. Lawmakers and livestock groups are putting more pressure on USDA to pull back a controversial proposed livestock marketing rule and to conduct a more detailed economic analysis of the rule's potential market impacts. In a letter to USDA, a bipartisan group of leaders on the House Agriculture Committee wrote USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack questioning the mandate of the proposed rule. The rule has several major provisions, including language that livestock producers would not be required to show harm to competition in federal lawsuits against packers. The rule also would prevent packers and poultry integrators from retaliatory practices, such as terminating contracts or joining a particular organization or filing a GPSA claim. Another provision of the rule would prevent packer-to-packer sales of livestock. The International Monetary Fund today says that the global economy will likely strengthen the rest of this year and in 2011 as China and other emerging powers offset weakness in the United States and Europe. The latest IMF Outlook predicts the world's economy will expand 4.8% this year and 4.2% next year. The IMF's forecast for worldwide growth this year is 0.2%, more than its previous estimate in July. The International Lending Agency predicts the U.S. economy will grow 2.6% this year, below the previous estimate of 3.3% and 2.3% next year. Monsanto Company today, the world's largest seed company, posted a deeper fourth-quarter loss than Wall Street expected and warned that next year's results might be weak as well. Monsanto posted a loss of $143 million in the fourth quarter compared to $233 million a year earlier. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, both programs that you can find on our website at willag.org or download to your computer automatically using iTunes. Just search for my name, Todd Gleason, or the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week. You can find all of our ag programming in either of those places on iTunes or at willag.org. Now, up next, you know the United States has an estimated 24 million pounds of horseradish roots, and they're ground and processed annually to produce approximately 6 million gallons of prepared horseradish. It makes the U.S. the number one producer of horseradish on the planet. And as you'll hear, Illinois is far and away the top producer of this very hot crop. Collinsville, Illinois, and the surrounding area is part of what is known as the American Bottoms. It's the Mississippi River Basin area adjacent to St. Louis. Carved out by the glaciers from the Ice Age, the soil is rich in potash, a nutrient on which horseradish thrives. The area, according to the Horseradish Information Council, grows 60% of the world's supply. University of Illinois plant pathologist Mohamed Babadous gives us some more facts and figures.
Total horseradish acreage in the United States is about 3,000 acres, about 6,000 acres, and more than half of that is in Illinois. And after Illinois, Wisconsin produce about 20%, Northern California produce another 20%, and about 5 to 10% in other states.
So Illinois leads the world in horseradish production. It's followed on the global stage by Hungary. Horseradish, again taken from the Horseradish Information Council's website, is believed to have originated in Central Europe, the area also linked to the most widely held theory of how horseradish was named. In German, it's called Meerrettich because it grows by the sea, or sea radish. Many believe the English mispronounced the German word Meer and began calling it Meerrettich. Eventually, it became known as horseradish. The word horse, as applied in horseradish, is believed to denote large size and coarseness. Radish comes from the Latin radix, meaning root. Horseradish is a perennial crop. That means it comes back year after year from the same rootstock, but producers in Illinois treat it as an annual. They put fresh roots in the ground each season. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On this Wednesday afternoon, time to take a look at the agricultural cash grain market. Matt Kunish of the Anderson's Climbers facility near Delphi, Indiana, is with us. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Afternoon.
Soybean harvest proceeding quickly there?
Very quickly. The only thing slowing it down right now is the elevators.
That's an unusual sort of state, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And that's because you're getting so much and didn't have that much capacity to throughput a very, very good crop?
Very, very good crop, yes. You know, rail's definitely behind the eight ball right now, but beans are coming at us, and you just can't stop them. Yields have been very good in the area.
You've been putting anything on the ground for soybeans?
No. No, we have not been.
I've heard that in a couple of places, kind of unusual.
That would not surprise me.
So how's the basis holding up?
On beans right now, it has been very weak lately. A lot of the processors kind of fading back to that 40 to 45 under. Your railers are probably going to be anywhere from 45 to 60, maybe even 65 under right now.
And it's a sharp decline from what we saw earlier in the year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just the exact opposite of what corn is doing right now.
Yeah. Tell me where your corn basis is.
Corn basis here at Climbers tonight is going to be 17 under.
And you expect it to close up and continue to close up or not?
Well, it's closed up about 8 cents in the past 3 days. So it's definitely heating up. I think the trend is probably stronger. I know that, you know, some of the elevators in eastern Illinois who may have been short some bushels because of a poor crop are looking into western Indiana right now trying to pull some bushels back. And obviously the ethanol in western Indiana will have to try and pull that from somewhere else. So,
have you had the feelers out talking about what's been happening in Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, how good that crop might be at this point?
I've talked to a few guys, maybe not as good as what I need to, but during harvest can't always make those phone calls. You know, it feels like it's still a pretty good crop. I think yields are probably, you know, 158, maybe 159, roughly. This area seemed to be hit kind of hard, so you always have a little bias in your back door. But, you know, still, I still think it's a pretty decent crop for the most part. I think everybody will figure it out once the rail gets moving.
Your bids for the day?
Delphi corn, 466, Climbers corn, 471, and Delphi beans at 1002.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
That is Matt Kunish. He's with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. They operate an elevator and an ethanol plant there. We'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we return. Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
It's National Noodle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, Jacob Schwepp demonstrated his process for making artificial mineral water. A German silversmith, he promoted Joseph Black's process of creating carbonic acid gas by combining chalk with sulfuric acid and then adding the gas to water under pressure. Artificial mineral waters were thought to have medicinal properties. It was not until the 1800s that CO2 was used for soft drinks like ginger ale and Coca-Cola. In 1893, cream of wheat was developed by Nabisco Foods. Millers in North Dakota, battling an economic depression, were looking to revive their business. The head miller, Thomas Admaden, convinced his partners to make a porridge out of farina, and cream of wheat was born. In 1851, Will Keith Kellogg died. He founded the Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flake Company to manufacture cereals developed by his brother, John Harvey Kellogg. And in 1997, prions were discovered. They were called an entirely new gene of disease-causing agents. Prions have been identified as a cause of mad cow disease. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity Smart Stacks corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It has not been a prettier sight in the Midwest for harvest in a very long time, unless, of course, you're in the really, really dry areas, and there are some of those. Can you tell me how it should proceed in the next week or so?
Well, I think we've got a little shot of energy that's going to come through the atmosphere and maybe bring us some shower activity for a little while. Over the weekend. The precipitation that's being advertised, though, is somewhat restricted. The only way we're going to manage to get any kind of meaningful rain out of it is if the system just takes its sweet time moving across the region. And it is going to be relatively slow moving, but there's not a tremendous amount of moisture in the atmosphere to be had at the moment. And it looks to me like the Gulf of Mexico is not really open very well for a good influx of moisture into the system. There will be some moisture influx, but not a lot. And so for that reason, I think a lot of places will get a quarter of an inch of rain, maybe a few half to three-quarter inch amounts, but those are going to be very limited in number. And this will all occur primarily in the western Corn Belt, I would say, probably on Saturday into Sunday. And for the areas east of the Mississippi River, we'll see a little bit of shower activity beginning on Sunday and will be most significant probably Monday and may linger a little bit into Tuesday morning of next week. That leaves us quite a few days here for changes in the forecast, so we'll keep an eye on that. I don't really think we're going to end up with a tremendous amount of moisture, but there will be some interruption to fieldwork for a little while because of this event.
There have been rumblings prior to this week's crop production report that the corn crop, of course, is not as big as many had suspected. And then there are some numbers out there now that are really, really low. I'm wondering whether you would agree about how low those numbers could possibly be, and I think maybe in the eastern Corn Belt, and how good the crop might look in the western Corn Belt based off weather. What do you think actually has happened so far?
There's a considerable amount of question as to just how much of an impact the weather bias had in some of those western areas. From the context that I've got in the eastern Corn Belt, it certainly sounds like that there's a lot of corn yield that came down. And I think some of the low numbers that have been suggested here recently might be a little extreme, but I do think that we've lost yield in many areas in the eastern Midwest coming up out of the Delta, of course, passing through a big portion of central and southern Indiana, and then scattered across portions of Ohio most definitely, and soybeans taking it pretty hard too in some of that region because that was the area that had the greatest amount of dryness. And, of course, we've had the sudden death issue in the West, and we've also had the excess moisture that was around. And I'm really not too clear on just how well we're doing in the Western Belt because of all the moisture surpluses.
Turn your attention now to South America. Tell me how they're progressing through their planting season.
Well, things are getting a little tenuous for Mato Grosso. You know, we're pretty late getting started in the fieldwork there. It doesn't usually create a problem with production, but right now it doesn't look like it's going to rain very good for the next week to 10 days in parts of Mato Grosso, and that could change the picture a little bit. The market mentality could easily shift a little bit over this next 10-day period if we don't see better rains evolving in Mato Grosso, which is, of course, the nation's most important soybean-producing state. I'm also looking at our long-range outlook, taking us all the way into January, and I'm seeing a lot of reason for us to be a little bit concerned about moisture later in the year, like late December and January in southern Brazil. So I think this year might be a little bit different from those we've seen in the past, where we may get the crop planted and it may take off fairly well, but we may run into a little moisture shortage down the road.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.